Roger Daltrey, 1984.
It's no secret that The Who have kind of taken an open-ended sabbatical. We just felt that the touring had become as big as it ever would, and it felt like we were imitating what we used to be. Our past had become, in a way, more popular than the stuff that we're doing in the present.
Roger Daltrey, 1987.
One of the strangest things about being Roger Daltrey as a solo artist is, to be really honest, I don't really enjoy it. I'm a group man. I've had 20 years in a band, and being a group man, you have to have a different outlook on your role in music. I mean, you have to give and take a lot more. I miss me mates.
Well, you don't have to miss them anymore, Roger. The Who are back together for a 25th anniversary tour. Hi, I'm Dan Neer, and this is Media America Radio's presentation of The Who, up close. Townsend.
My first musical experiences when I was when I used to sing choir. I sang choir 8, 9, 10, 11. Then Christmas of my 11th year, my grandmother bought me a guitar. Then I stopped singing choir. But I was singing in a choir, even though my family wasn't very religious. My first sort of sense of musical uplift was in a church. One aspect of rock and one aspect of The Who is that it has always been quite important to me to recognise the fact that rock is a church. It is our church, and that, you know, just at the same time that we actually confront political things and societal things and ecological things and all the things that rock is that can deal with, you know, teenage things, cars, sex, and all the rest of it. So we also must aspire and allow ourselves uplift, and that's always been one of the great things about rock.
People try to put us to death,
talking about my generation,
just because we get around.
Roger Daltrey.
I think with bands like The Who, I mean, there are two kinds of rock and roll band now. You've got the kind of bands that are choreographed, as I call it, choreographed rock. Not to say that's bad. And then you get bands like The Who that get up there and they do it. And it's, you know, it's the music that's important and the energy that comes out of it. But frustration and aggression and the friction between the members of The Who, I would say were at least probably 50% of the reason that The Who was so successful. I really do believe that. If The Who had ever had a really great time for those 20 years, we wouldn't have created half of that music, really. It was all created out of frustration and anger, mostly at ourselves, our inability to change things fast. I mean, isn't that the frustration of youth? If it had been a fun time, I'm sure hardly any of that stuff would have come out like it did.
Happy Jack wasn't old, but he was a man. He lived in the sand at the island. Prevent Jack from being happy.
Happy Jack, the title track from The Who's second album. The cover of their next record, The Who Sell Out, depicts a not-so-happy Roger Daltrey.
If anyone wanted to get me into a tub of baked beans again, they'd have to put them in the oven a little bit first, because those beans they used on the Who Sell Out album were straight out of the fridge. And I was sitting there absolutely freezing, and in some bright spot, I think it was Keith Moon, got a 2-bar electric fire, which they stuck up the back of the bathtub, which you can't see in the photograph, but it is actually there. And by the time I got out of the bathtub, half of it was cooking and bubbling, and the other half was freezing. I'd never do that again. I got pneumonia from that. It was terrible.
I know you deceive me, now here's a surprise.
I could see for miles.
In 1969, Pete Townshend's blossoming genius as a songwriter manifested itself when The Who released the rock opera Tommy. Here's Roger Daltrey.
We've done this grandiose project, and like all rock and roll, or good rock and roll projects, it needed a lot of hype. So we announced it as this wonderful rock opera and all this and all that and everything else, and I was up there singing the whole thing every night, doing all the parts. And of course, I suppose really I've had the actor in me all the time. And obviously when you start to sing that part every night, it does affect you. It can't help but affect you. It affects the way you think. Whether I became Tommy or not, I don't know, but obviously it had a great effect on me. It was a wonderful thing for a singer to be able to actually perform. It was fabulous, because, I mean, normally you get up there and do a three-minute song, then have a break, and then have another three-minute song. To actually go up there and become a total character with these songs that went on for 10 minutes, and then the whole project going on for, like, an hour, it was just wonderful. It was really... it was the ultimate thing for a rock singer to be able to do.
I've absolutely no control over the beast.
An unleashed beast. Next on The Who Up Close. When Pete Townshend created the rock opera Tommy, he forgot to tell it who was master.
I think it's extremely likely that more will happen. I mean, I've absolutely no control over the beast. I've heard a lot of talk about an American touring show and the New York theatre backers are on the phone once a week. So it's really just a decision as to at what point one allows something else to happen. I mean, the problem that I've always had is that, for example, with the show that happened in the West End, I didn't do that. I didn't get involved in that personally because I was that interested in Tommy anymore. But, you know, I was fascinated with the idea of being involved in a West End musical. And I had a great time. You know, I got into the whole sort of theatre scene for 2 months and really enjoyed it. I learned a lot of lessons. The show would have run forever, except that it was costing money. You know, we had an enormous chorus and a big band and lasers and God knows what. And although it was, you know, it had good attendances, if it had filled up every day for the next 100 years, we still would have made a loss. So I started to learn a lot about, you know, lowering your sights. You don't go into a West End production as though you're doing a Who show. You know what I mean? It's like the slightly different mechanics. And but I don't think Tommy's... As I said, I don't think it's really in my control. It's a piece of public property, and if somebody wants to do it or use it or whatever, I think it's probably a lot left in it.
I'm free.
Roger Daltrey.
Rock and roll does create an incredible amount of pressure on the road that does blot out a lot of those things that perhaps you should have remembered, like meeting certain people and, you know, especially heads of record companies always ignoring the lift, you know. but there is just something about it, especially when you're performing, because it's a kind of occupation where if you don't do it 101%, then you're not doing it. And if you do it 101%, your mind is elsewhere. And then when you come off stage, you every night you meet wall-to-wall faces, absolutely wall-to-wall faces, you know, rows and rows of them. And you think back on this from a point in the future, and it does, it just seems like a blur for some reason. I know it shouldn't, but it does. And I think really it's just the nature of the work. I mean, it's like any other profession where you really have to just throw yourself into it to that extent. And like I say, you can't cheat rock and roll. You can't give it 99% and use the 1% for remembering the faces afterwards.
Roger Daltrey.
When Who used to record, when Pete used to come up with a kind of demo, which was almost a finished song anyway, and obviously Pete doesn't sing like me, and some would say, what a shame I don't sing like Pete, you know, but obviously on Pete's demo, that, for instance, on Won't Get Fooled Again, there's an indication of a yell. I think it goes at the end of the big organ part, and he went, yeah! And I thought, well, that's all right. But I don't know, it was the ultimate expression. It was the scream from the horror, from the centre of your body, and I thought, this just has got to come over as someone totally letting go. We recorded that at Mick Jagger's house in Stargroves in Berkshire, and it was actually recorded in the hallway on the Stones mobile. And I remember when I first did it, and I just did it out of frustration. The track was just so good, and I was like, yeah! And Glenn came in holding his ears, going, oh, what did you do? he said, that's great. He said, let's really go for one. So it grew from there, and it got bigger and bigger until it ended up what it is. I think from where it is on the record, it got even bigger on stage. You know?
Insights coming up on The Who Up Close. Pete Townshend's exploits with drugs and alcohol have been well documented, but that's all behind him now.
What has happened is that I have confronted what obstructed me, and I've removed the obstruction. I don't quite know how, but it's happened, and I think that it's allowed me to enjoy things which I already had, you know. And that's what's, I think, but the most important thing that's making me happy is power. Not the power to overcome somebody else or other people, but the power to control my own life. And because I trust myself, and only trust myself, I don't have to rely on somebody else's power. You know, I can control where I'm going, so I don't even really need to know where I'm going to go and how I'm going to get there. All I know is that wherever it is, I will decide. I look back at the middle period of The Who, you know, the 67, 68, 69, the road, with great affection. I like that time because it was the first time we started to play in America in 67, and we were actually accepted as musicians then, you know, rather than as stylists, which is what we'd been in Britain, and as agitators. We were accepted as musicians in a band. We did longer concerts. People listened. And it's where all my love of America and Americans is really rooted, is in that first gesture that, you know, well, however you dress and whatever you might represent, you know, whether you smash guitars or not, you know, we'll listen to what you've got to tell us, you know.
Kick Ass, when Up Close returns. The Who Up Close is back with Roger Daltrey.
The Who's next album definitely was a conscious attempt to present the band again for what we were, which is a hard-nosed, working, kick-ass, sweaty rock and roll band. It was the strangest album. I personally thought that we really, really broken a lot of barriers with that album. I when it came out, I thought it was really taking chances. It was being totally unique. At last, the band was totally, totally unique.
Roger Daltrey.
One of the things about the rock business is that you can believe your own publicity in the end. If you're not careful, it can drown you. And it's amazing when you're on tour. You go on tour and you become caught up in this kind of machine that's going, and there's all this publicity, and you think, oh, God, God. We're really important people. Oh, boy, are we important. And then you come off the tour and you realise that most of the world doesn't even know you're doing it. So, not really important at all, is it?
Pete Townsend.
This whole thing of, like, the importance of The Who and stuff like that. We're a band like any other band. There's lots of bands around. There's lots of music. There's lots of people. A lot of people that like The Who like lots of other bands as well, and some folk out there don't give a damn whether we ever play again or not. We're playing now, and if we appear on the stage, it will be because we want to be there, and that's always been something which, as in a way, what has troubled me in the past about performing has been the fact that The Who has been bigger than itself somehow. It's hard to explain.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man. Bad man.
Behind blue eyes.
I've always felt that good rock and roll for teenagers and adolescents should challenge and should question. And pre the Sex Pistols, it had all got very safe. I mean, it was just incredibly safe. I mean, it was like a wet sponge. And the Sex Pistols threw it all in the air and said, what a load of crap, it's all bullshit and everything else. And then, of course, anyone with any sense of honesty would look around and say, yeah, they're right, it has got crappy. And it was really good. I think it really kicked the music business in the arse. And it feels like it would be great for someone to come and do it again. And hopefully they will.
Roger Daltrey.
There's one guy that's from a band called Police, who I think are definitely a band to watch in the future.
A prophecy fulfilled after this. The year, 1979. The place, New York City. Even Roger Daltrey could not have known how prophetic his words would be.
In Quadrophenia, it's all mostly unknown people. The star is a guy called Phil Daniels, who's just a young actor. There's one guy that's from a band called Police, who I think are definitely a band to watch in the future. The singer in Police, he plays Ace Face in the film, and he's terrific. And Police as a band are really worth listening to. So if you know, if people listening are interested, try and catch that group, because they are very good.
Pete Townsend.
Late 60s, early 70s, we were such caricatures. Roger with his glued-on psychedelic hair, and me always insisting on wearing a boiler suit because I refused to have anything to do with fashion. Keith Moon, who would drive back to throw a TV out of the window. John Entwistle, who was so intent on this sort of stolid, solid image and his ability to buy 50 Cartier watches in a day and live the archetypical gold chain rock star. I mean, it was a time of that we were very conscious of entertainers as caricatures. I remember that great thing Tom Smothers said, as he ended up watching himself on television and ended up as a pale imitation of his TV self, you know. And once you caricature yourself, you do end up as an imitation of yourself.
Can you see the real me? Can you? Can you?
Me. We're back with The Who's Pete Townshend.
Who by Numbers is the album that I think that has, like, grown the most gracefully, because it was probably the first time that I ever did what I said that I was doing, for example, on the current album, which is just shoot from the hip, just write. And I took in, I think, 9 songs, and there are 8 songs on the album, or maybe 10 songs, 9 songs on the album. I said, that's it. That's all I can do. I can't do any more. Because at that particular time, I'd been through the whole Tommy film with Ken Russell. We'd done a very, very heavy touring schedule. I was really worried about booze. I was unhappy because Roger was really unhappy about the managers that we had at the time, Kit Lambert and Chris Stamp, and wanted to get them out. And that caused me a hell of a lot of pain, because they weren't managers to me, they were friends. And although I knew that Roger was right and that we were past the point where they were really managing us, and we did need management, it was painful for me to know that they were going to go. And I felt the group was just getting very sort of messy and dissipated. And if you like, these camps that you were talking about were at their most acute around that period. And so I just went in with a lot of songs which were really about the way I felt. I think I forced the band into a corner with that material.
I see myself on TV. I'm a baker, a paper clown.
After 75, from 75, 76, 77, 78, up until Keith's death, I wanted to get out of the band. And the band knew that, and I think a lot of our fans knew that, and I know our management knew that. But the reasons were not really very well founded. It was just like, in a sense, it was just based on the fact that I wanted to, I suppose, change my life in a way. You know, I didn't like things the way it was. I didn't like life the way it was.
On September 7th, 1978, Keith Moon passed away. Besides being one of rock's most renowned drummers, he reigned as prankster supreme. Here's Pete Townshend.
I've heard a lot of stories, half of which are true and half of which are false, but the ones that are true are so much worse than the ones which are false. I always love to tell the story about how we once drove back to a hotel because Keith had forgotten to throw the television out of the window.
The Who brought in Kenny Jones and recorded Face Dances. The end of an era, when The Who Up Close returns. Roger Daltrey.
It is strange being a rock singer, just a rock singer at my age. Rock and roll doesn't sit as well with middle-aged people, and I don't care. It's not to say that we can't do it. It's just that you're forever trying not to do what you did before, which becomes more and more difficult, and perhaps it's impossible. But it's that awful feeling of being a parody. It's strange that you. And that's what I felt with The Who. We weren't breaking any new ground, and the things that we'd done in the past were far more popular than anything that we've done in recent years. And it gives you a strange feeling. It's not to say that you still might not come up with something fabulous, but it just gets more and more difficult.
The dissatisfaction in The Who had almost come to a head. They recorded one more album together, the aptly titled It's Hard. After 2 decades of giving the world some of the best rock and roll it has ever known, The Who called it a day. Now, as you hear this, the Who are about to embark on a tour that started out as 25 concerts in 25 cities to celebrate their 25th anniversary as a band. The ticket demand was so great in certain areas that the tour has blossomed into 40 dates in 27 North American cities. Right about now, Pete Townshend is releasing a solo album called The Iron Man as well. What will happen after the tour is finished? Well, who knows? Thanks for listening. Roger Daltrey, 1984.
It's no secret that the Who have kind of taken an open-ended sabbatical. We just felt that the touring had become as big as it ever would.
Roger Daltrey, 1987.
I miss me mates.
Well, you don't have to miss them anymore, Roger. The Who are back together for a 25th anniversary tour. Hi, I'm Dan Neer. Be listening next week as Media America Radio presents The Who Up Close. Roger Daltrey, 1984.
It's no secret that the Who have kind of taken an open-ended sabbatical. We just felt that the touring had become as big as it ever would.
Roger Daltrey, 1987.
I miss me mates.
Well, you don't have to miss them anymore, Roger. The Who are back together for a 25th anniversary tour. Hi, I'm Dan Neer. Be listening this week as Media America Radio presents The Who Up Close. Roger Daltrey, 1984.
It's no secret that the Who have kind of taken an open-ended sabbatical. We just felt that the touring had become as big as it ever would.
Roger Daltrey, 1987.
I miss me mates.
Well, you don't have to miss them anymore, Roger. The Who are back together for a 25th anniversary tour. Hi, I'm Dan Neer. Be listening tonight as Media America Radio presents The Who Up Close.